All right, gather around, everyone. Very nice to have you here. This is me. This is Thibaut. Okay, I'm the founder and CEO of Altrove. We are a startup developing new alternative materials to critical materials, specifically critical inorganic materials. And today I'm going to speak mostly about permanent magnets. We're doing this using AI and lab automation, and I'm going to tell you more in a minute. But first, I want to talk about something that you probably know, right? Over the past 20 years, demand exploded for critical minerals, including for rare earths, and it's not about to stop, right? It's about to keep going in the next foreseeable future. And a lot has changed, right? The use cases have changed in the past 20 years, the volumes have changed, but some things haven't changed one bit, which is the supply chain, right? If you're a European company, if you're an American company, you're basically importing virtually all of your rare earths, all of the rare earth magnets that you need from China. There are some exceptions, but they're more the exception than the rule. Obviously, this causes situations that are very unfortunate. One of them is volatile prices. So, you know, prices are up and down in the past 5 years. They're probably at an all-time high these days. Which your purchasing departments pretty much don't like. But they also create situations. I mean, I've had some discussions since yesterday with some of you around, well, if you need to ask authorization whether or not you can incorporate Chinese rare earth in your use cases, and they say no, well, you're pretty much stuck. So electrification in the past 20 years, and again in the future, multiplied demand, and geopolitics multiplied risk. Now, we talked to hundreds of industrial companies who are using critical materials, including rare earth magnets, and they all told us the same thing. They told us, well, we wish we didn't have to use them. We didn't rely on these single supply chains that are overly concentrated in one country, but traditional R&D is not really able to solve this problem. It's very slow, it's very expensive, it's very hazardous. And my message today is that it's not a chemistry problem, it's a method problem. So if you're trying to look for alternatives to rare earth magnets, you probably realize that in the past, again, 20 years, R&D has pretty much failed at finding them. So you either have, obviously, ferrite magnets. These are great, but very low magnetic strength, brittle, bulkier, so if you can't just like, it's not linear, you can't just use 10 times as much to have the same performances. Manganese magnets also have a lot of issues, whether it's low magnetic performance, processing, instability, etc. But where does AI help in the, again, it's not a chemistry problem, it's not that it's impossible to reach interesting properties, interesting magnetic properties without rare earth. Rare earth do help, they have some properties that make them interesting, but there are some possibilities. It's just that, what's the material, right? A material isn't just, oh, we'll put a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's not just an elemental problem. It's a mix of composition, of dopants, of microstructure, of processes, and traditional R&D is just able to scratch the surface yearly on just a handful of candidates, when in reality, the playing ground is almost endless. We have millions, dozens of millions of possible combinations to explore that, well, traditional R&D can't, right? So that's where AI helps. AI is really good these days. I mean, I know it's a buzzword. I know it encompasses a lot of realities, but AI is really good at doing mathematically complicated tasks that typical R&D, typical humans can't really do. And so screening all of these possibilities. But if I'm standing with you guys and you guys work in the industry, I'm sure you will agree that prediction is great. But it's just this, it's just prediction. And prediction without actual industrial application, without industrial proofpoint, it's just, I like this punchline, expensive speculation. So if you're looking at how does AI or how does like DFT or DFT similar approaches work on, okay, you have a predicted material, on paper it looks great, on paper it should be stable, you're trying to predict how the, if this material was stable, what would be its, I don't know, electromagnetic properties, for instance. These approaches, they predict ideal crystals. In an ideal world, they're amazing. But what they don't predict is stuff that, I mean, you guys deal with every day. Dopant solubility, metastable phases, sintering reality. They don't predict these really hard industrial realities. So AI alone doesn't really move the needle in terms of like, yes, you can screen a lot more than you could previously, but if you're not really turning this into reality, if you're just staying computational, it doesn't really move the needle in terms of time that it takes to get to a success. So we believe at Ultra that a successful approach is to actually combine the highly combinatory efficient approach of AI and machine learning models with high throughput labs, with high throughput experimental testing. So you basically have AI identifying the best candidates, generating the recipes, and then physically making these recipes hundreds of times over and over and over, characterizing them, understanding what the delta is between what you wanted to make and what you actually made, and then learning from each iteration. So yeah, material characterization, you actually using AI at that point is really interesting because instead of relying on human expertise, you can have a program that will almost instantaneously and very precisely tell you what you made compared to what you wanted to make. Because we're operating in a low data space, so maybe you don't know this, but if I were standing in a room, and maybe you've read in the newspapers that, for instance, for drug discovery, right? In pharma, the AI is very useful at predicting new compositions for new medicine. One of the reasons it's very useful is that you can, actually pharma is very close to an LLM. You can train on very vast amounts of data because they've been collected for decades. They're very standardized. We don't have this in material science. We have, I don't know, 30, 40, 50,000 known recipes of materials. That's very little. So it's really hard to train interesting models on 50,000 known materials. Recipes. So when you're in a low data space, being able to optimize, to dope, and to create your own data when you're doing experiments actually gives you a super strong edge at becoming better and improving your models as you go. And then, of course, yeah, dopant optimization is something that's oftentimes forgotten. Like, a lot of companies that are saying, I'm going to do AI for materials discovery, are forgetting the industrial reality that your ideal material, V1, is going to be crap. You're going to have a potato. But then, once you're going to dope it, it will be able to reach its full capacity and its full potential. So the only way to go from, I don't know, a dozen years to a few months in actual synthesis of new compounds is by mixing AI and machine learning with high-throughput experimentation. So this is what a traditional R&D process looks like, right? You got ideation, what the hell should I make? What is even worth doing? Recipe prediction. So, what's the recipe to make this? Property optimization, including the doping, and then scale, right? And so what we're working on at Altrove is we're actually trying to move the needle on all of these steps, and not just on the ideation step, which is what most AI for materials is actually doing, only working on the first one. But if you only shorten the first part and all the rest stays the same, instead of having 15 years and $100 million, you're going to spend 14 years and $95 million. Doesn't really change much. So what that means for the buyers, for industrial players who actually want to buy the materials, they're not really interested in who's playing Harry Potter with materials. They're actually interested in buying thousands of tons of that material. For the buyer, it means you have an earlier kill decision. What you want is that at every step of the way, fairly fast and in a cost-efficient manner, you're able to say, this doesn't work for me, and kill the decision before you invest any further. That means also less dependency and more optionality instead of having all your eggs in the same basket. So yeah, this is what it looks like, pretty much the learning loop, right? And I think the importance, again, even beyond Altrove, beyond what we do, I think generally speaking, this is the right approach. You don't want a lab that is validating your model. You want a lab that is training it. You want to generate the data that will make your models better so that you don't just have predicted compositions, you have physical materials that you can synthesize and then focus on. One thing obviously that's very important and that we keep talking about since we're here is the scale-up process. Just because you've made something in the lab doesn't mean it can be scaled up from grams to tons in a straightforward way. So you need to incorporate the precursors that are going to affect the properties of your materials at industrial scale already when you're working in the lab, and already train your models and incorporate them in the models from the beginning. So So far, the company is 2 years old. We've raised over a dozen million euros. We've done dozens of experimentally accessible. So basically, we have a backlog of, it's closer to like 20, 25 magnets that each fit a really interesting niche, right? So one thing, I think I'm actually stepping on my next slide, but we're not trying to find necessarily the neo killer, right? We're not trying, the reason we think this market is interesting is because it's monolithic. Nowadays, everybody's using either neodymium iron boron, samarium cobalt, ferrite, and then in some cases, alnico, right? But in reality, people who use the same magnets have very different needs. It's just they don't have a ton of alternatives, so people end up using the same thing even though they don't really need the same thing. So for us, what we're actually interested in knowing is when we talk to a potential partner, a potential customer, we're asking them, we need all of your constraints. Because maybe you don't really care about the weight of your magnet. If you're doing offshore wind turbines, what do you care? Whether your magnet is heavy or whether it's light. But you care about its power. If you're doing AirPods, you do care about the weight of your magnet. So you're not going to end up with the same candidates working on this kind of stuff. Obviously, temperature window, BH max, cost ceilings. Again, everybody wants to be cost efficient. But what's your tolerance? If you're saying tomorrow you could be not reliant on China, or not only China, for some of your rare earths, or maybe you still buy from China, but instead of having heavy rare earths, you can use cerium, or you can use light rare earths. Would that change something for you? And what exactly? So all of this stuff, right? So far, we have 20, 25 magnets that, on theory, have a really specific niche that they're fitting in the market that is not one-size-fits-all. It's not a shelf product. It's something that really works for certain industries and certain use cases. We've designed our first, and we've actually made our first magnets that are pressed under 9 months. And in under 12 weeks, so that's, what, not even 3 months, we've been able to outperform state-of-the-art commercial-grade magnets using these methods. Then again, this one is more about context, but it's about saying that increased electrification increases demand, but offer doesn't really scale the same way, or actually a diversified offer doesn't really scale the same way. The supply network isn't really changing. That's one thing that Europe is very good at, but like we've had very strict regulations, very strict regulatory frameworks coming in there before we found solutions. So we're asking people to I'm sure you guys are concerned. We're asking people to diversify away, to switch supply chains, make them broader, actually find solutions when in reality the geopolitical context hasn't enabled that. Then again, we're not saying, can this magnet become the new killer? We're asking, where is neodymium iron boron not economically or not geographically or geopolitically rational? And that's what we're working on. So if you're interested in getting in touch, for us, at this point, we don't sell magnets. We're building partnerships. We work with a small number of highly curated partners in each industry, whether it's defense, aerospace, automotive, whatever industry you're in. It's a very low-risk, high-reward partnership. And we integrate manufacturing constraints from day one because you have to. If you don't do this, you're going to end up doing something in the lab that doesn't really have a reality. Happy to take any questions or to answer you now or later. Thanks so much.